Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode. What's up, everybody? This is Dominique Henderson, your YouTube CFP, coming at you today. Got a very, very cool and special guest, Mr. Ash Exantis, is joining us today from the NYC, man. What's up today, man?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well, you know. Happy to be here, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Hey, us collaborators, us hustlers, we gotta stick together, man. And I had to say that when I caught your stuff on Insta, I was like, this dude, man, energy, man. That's like the number one thing that came to mind is your energy. So I was like, when I reached out, I was like, maybe he has time to do it, maybe he doesn't, because you got all this stuff going on. But today, man, I wanna chop it up with you. We chatted briefly last week, and I think the deal is you brought up some interesting points about entrepreneurship. So that's really what I want to rap about today. And I just love for you to kind of give us a little background on your story. Who is Ash? Like, how did you get to doing what you're doing? And, you know, kind of give you the floor for a little bit.
No, I appreciate you. So Ash Exantis, better known as Ash Cash. I've been in the financial services industry for 20 years, 10 years as a banker, and then 10 years as an entrepreneur. But I'm just a kid from the projects, man. I'm a kid from St. Nicholas Projects in Harlem, Huntsway Nation and 8th Avenue. And I've always been a hustler. And so, you know, because I grew up low income, I'm the youngest of three, product of a single parent home. So my mom raised three of us. And so at 8 years old, my mother couldn't make ends meet. So I was at the local supermarket packing bags, trying to help out, you know, any way I can. By the time I was 11, 12 years old, I graduated from packing bags to selling mixtapes and T-shirts at, as a vendor on 125th Street. That's when, like, 125th Street was infamous for vending and things of that nature. And so I did that, you know, up until, you know, wound up, you know, getting a job in a video store, fast out the Blockbuster videos when I was 17 years old. Yeah. So I worked at Blockbuster for 2 years. I was actually an assistant manager there. And, you know, it honestly was fate, you know, almost, because one of the assistant managers was working at Blockbuster and she was a teller at JP Morgan Chase Bank. And one day she just came in and was like, hey, you know, we're doing this hiring, this open house, you know, is anybody interested in becoming a teller? And so for me, I knew that the only other step for me was becoming a store manager at the video store. And I was like, who wants to really do that, you know? And so I was like, go ahead, let me take the leap and interview. And the rest is history. You know, I became a banker. I was 19 years old. And I had a great career in banking. So I did everything in banking, from teller to personal banker to private banker to branch manager. I was the CEO of a credit union. And for me, sort of like the light bulb kind of rang for me when I realized when I was a private banker, I was managing money for mass affluent clients. So I had a book of business, 400 clients, assets, 250,000 and above. My most wealthiest client was worth $22 million. And from there, I realized, you know, dealing with wealthy people, that they had a team of people that were like helping them, you know, maintain, grow their wealth. And I said, you know, my people back in Harlem don't have this. My people, you know, in Atlanta don't have this. My people in South Central LA don't have this. And I'm a big hip hop fan. And so Jay-Z has this quote that says, there's much bigger issues in the world I know, but I first had to take care of the world I know. And for me, as somebody from, you know, from the block back in Harlem to, now I'm in the boardroom with the, you know, CEOs, I can speak both languages. But I first wanted to take care of the world I know. And so that's why I do what I do today, which is really just helping, people who have similar backgrounds, people who are not given the opportunity to create wealth for themselves and their family. I teach them, how to create wealth. And that's whether that's through books, whether that's through, workshops, whether that's through online courses, whether that's through group coaching, one-on-one coaching. I just help people change their mindset in order to manage their money right.
Man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You have a lot there that you said that we're going to unpack. But you said one thing about the Jay-Z quote, which reminds me of something that Tyler Perry said, which, he's in the business of holding the door open, right? So we've got to definitely, when we get to a space, and that's why I'm so glad we're talking about this entrepreneurship today for what I would call the aspiring and that advisor for tomorrow. But holding the door open for folks so that they can get through once we didn't made it up and, kind of skin our knees, right? So, I really appreciate that about it. So, I've listened to some of your past interviews, and so I have a little history. I appreciate you doing that, giving us the lowdown. But I'm curious, like, peel back, like, 1, 2, 3 layers. Like, what was it like, even now? What was it like coming up in that environment? Like, I grew up upper middle class. So, I have friends that have your story, but I've never lived it. Like, what is it like living where you are now, having seen what you've seen, experienced all of your experience, and then looking back and just knowing that, like, you was a kid back on the street back in the day? What is that like, man?
Man, like, honestly, every single day I wake up, I wake up to a dream almost, my house, and no bragging or anything, but my house now is 6,000 square feet, right? It's funny. So if you go to my Instagram page recently, Throwback Thursday, I posted a picture of myself and a friend of mine in my room, right? The room that I grew up in. Literally, that room is the size of my daughter's closet. Mm. Wow. So think about that. I grew up in a room I left my mom's house when I was 24 years old. Okay. Right. And so for 24 years or 22 years, because we had moved to a different housing complex, but for 22 years, I was in a room that was so small that literally right now it's just, my daughter's closet is that size, right? Mm. I say this to say that every single day, that's why I do what I do, because I understand what it really feels like to be at the bottom. When people say, I was raised in the projects with roaches and rats, like, that was real. Like, I lived on the first floor, and my window was adjacent to, like, the dumpster where everybody threw their garbage and their trash. And so literally, like rats, not mice, but like rats would be in my house. Like, we couldn't leave any food out. Like, this, it was one of the worst sort of like conditions that you could possibly live in. If you live in public housing, you'll know that, even the maintenance people, they don't come out as often. And so you might, you don't
They're
get
scared.
Fresh paint. Right. Exactly. And so living in that environment, I think for me, it did a couple of things, though. It allowed me to understand that, all right, I know what this life looks like already, and I was able to survive that. But also, once you exposed me to another life to say, wow, this is what it looks like to live abundantly, there's really no way I will ever go back there, because the moment that I know it's even possible, because growing up in certain spaces, sometimes you could feel like, man, like, this is, this is just the card I was dealt. Like, this is just the life I'm supposed to live. But at the end of the day, if you are exposed to more, if you see more, you can actually be more, right? And so, you know, growing up in that environment, and I would not take it back, because I think that it is what has allowed me to be so ambitious to want better, to you know, I have two kids. I have an 11-year-old, I have a 4-year-old. And so it allows me to make sure that my kids' experience is going to be totally different, right? My kids are going to grow up, you know, in an environment of abundance. And in that way, they could take the torch to the next level for their kids and, you know, and things of that nature. And so, you know, it's humbling, to say the least, because I never get to a place where I look at what I have and I'm ungrateful for it, or I never look at it as if, you know, like I've lived in an environment of scarcity, and so now that I'm able to, you know, have space, you know, like and have abundance and you know, have success. I appreciate it every single day. Single day I wake up, I'm happy. You know,
I hear you, man. I've listened to Chris Rock talk about the meaning of wealth, and I love his definition. He's like, being wealthy is having options.
Right. Right? Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so I want to pivot that a little bit, because today we want to chat about the that entrepreneur spirit. I want to know, like, can you kind of quantify or package what this hustle, like for a person that doesn't have the background that you've had? They may be like, well, I mean, I don't have that type of motivation, but like I would say today's entrepreneur needs to have that part of grit, you know, in order to kind of make it. So like, what would you say has kind of shaped some of the things, like maybe that in your life that could translate to somebody that did not have that background? Like, what are some of the lessons that you learned, or some of the things that maybe your mom taught you, or I don't know, like what could you put in that package to help somebody? That's like,
yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, I think that, so a couple of things is, number one is that success looks different for everybody. Right. And so as an entrepreneur, I think it's important that you define what success looks like for you, because if you are not defining that, then you're chasing your tail. Like you'll never, get fulfillment in what you're doing. Like you have to be able to define what success is for you, number one. Number two is, no matter what your circumstance is, your desires and your aspirations are going to be based on the vision you have for your life, right? And so me growing up the way I grew up forced me to have a certain vision for my life. And so because I had that vision, because I wanted my life to be a certain way, I clearly define that, right? I have a definite chief aim. I said, this is what my life is going to look like. This is what I'm going to do with my time. This is what I want to do. And then now I start building a plan based on that. If somebody has not come from that environment, they still, right? It doesn't matter what your circumstance is. It doesn't matter how you grew up. You still have a vision for your life. And whatever that vision is, you should base what you do and how you do it and the direction that you're going based on that plan. Because to your point, entrepreneurship is not for everybody, right? Like you have to have this sense of, you know, I want to build something. I want to own it. I want to build it my way. And those are really, I would say, the two main things, because I have friends who are not entrepreneurs who are wildly successful because they have no desire to build something on their own. They don't want to be the boss. They appreciate being able to run a company within a larger company. They appreciate the steadiness of income that comes from working a corporate job. And so they love their job. They enjoy it. And so I think that having that definiteness of purpose and saying, this is what I want my life to look like. And that's why you have to start there, right? This is what success looks like. This is my definite, chief aim. This is what I want to accomplish. And now that's when you start filling in the blanks. Now you say, okay, is my 9-to-5, does that fit into what success looks like? Does it fit into my definite chief aim? Or would I be better suited as an entrepreneur, creating, you know, creating something that I own. So I would definitely say those are the two things that I learned in my journey and that I would say to anybody, no matter where you come from, define success yourself. Because I'll give you an example. When I was a banker, because I came from the projects, people loved me. People were like, oh my God, this is great. Like, I remember, you know, when I was a branch manager at Chase, you know, they used to have your, I don't know if they still do it, but they would have the picture of the branch manager, you know, in the window with their name. And so, like, literally, like, people would come that I know would come and, like, take a picture, you know, take a picture of my picture. And, you know, just they were so excited that, like, oh, my God, this is Ash. Like, this guy runs this bank or whatever. But for me, I was, like, empty inside. I didn't, you know, like I was at the point where, especially when you think about, like, so I wound up leaving banking around 2009, right? So you think about 2008, 2009, what was going on, you know, with the Great Recession. A lot of people never hear the story of how the people on the inside felt, right? You always hear the story about the recession and what was happening on the outside, but what happened on the inside? What was happening on the inside is the bosses didn't care about no recession, right? They were putting a lot of pressure on us to meet numbers that, you know,
couldn't be met.
Couldn't be met, exactly. And so you talk about working 80 hours, you talk about, you know, going home with a migraine, stressed out because these impossible numbers are put on you. And, you know, some people got, like, physically sick. People were like, it was a lot going on around that time. And so when I was like, my health is not worth this, you know what I'm saying? So I'm out, you know? And I wound up leaving in 2009, you know, leaving the banking world in 2009, going into 2010. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, you gotta, you know, you got to have your why. You have to understand why you're doing it. You have to have the grit. There's just so much that goes along with that. And so, you know, I was empty inside. People were looking at me like I was successful, but I didn't feel successful. And so that's when I had to define, what does success mean to me? And I could tell you, when I decided to quit my job, like I said, I was 2009 going into 2010. People thought I was crazy. It's a recession. You're about to quit a six-figure job to become what? An entrepreneur? And where I come from, we don't have entrepreneurs, right? Like, entrepreneurs we know are street pharmacists, right? And so we don't have that. Like, what is this?
Ballplayers, so rappers, are street pharmacists. Yeah,
you're exactly. Right. You know what I'm saying? And so I took a beating. I took a beating early on from friends and family because I made this decision. But at the end of the day, it was what fulfilled me. It was what made me whole. And so that would be my advice to anybody. Make sure that you're defining success and that you have a definite chief aim for your life.
Thanks for taking the time with me today to listen. Just one quick question before we continue. Have you subscribed to my YouTube channel yet? If you haven't, I want to give you just one more reason to subscribe. Each week, I'm going to be sharing what I've learned in 20 plus years in the industry so that you can reach your goals faster. How's that? Now back to this week's episode.
Man, this is good. This is good stuff. Because you threw out a phrase, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but think and grow rich. And Napoleon Hill talks about that definiteness of purpose. So like, if you don't have, I don't think you could successfully build anything without knowing, like, having a vision in mind of what it's supposed to be like. That's not to say it won't change, it won't iterate, it won't, you know, morph into something different. But you've got to know, like, I think, you know, that's one of the key things. I talk to a lot of advisors, and the very first question I ask them when I'm coaching them, and I'm like, what is it that you're trying to build? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm just trying to make a lot of money. I'm like, no, that's not what you're trying to build. There's got to be something totally different than that. So let's unpack something that you said a little earlier about this, the feeling that you felt during that Great Recession on the inside. I think that's an interesting perspective because that is not talked about a lot. And the pressure of entrepreneurship, like, so I think there's pressure whether you're in corporate in an environment that you were like before you left, or when you're an entrepreneur and you got to walk this lonely road because there's not, like, you got this, you know, you can go over to the water cooler to your coworker and start talking about what's going on, you know, about the man. Like, you can't do any of that. So, I want to kind of unpack some of those things that you said, but I think the key phrase I want you to kind of jump off on is you said you were empty inside, right? And that's a key thing, because if you're not, if you're not whole in here, then to go out and try to build something or try to go work with people, all this, it doesn't come together. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, I say it's like Chinese food, right? Like when you eat Chinese food, you know, it's a lot of calories you're intaking, but because there's no real nutritional value, you sort of like feel, you know, you're still hungry afterwards. You're still like, why am I just had this whole big plate, but I'm still hungry. I mean, that's what it's like. And I think that for me, because again, I grew up low income, I placed a lot of value on things, right? And so, you know, my goal was to acquire things. And when I acquired those things and I still was like, oh my God, like what's going on? Like it didn't make me feel like what I thought it would make me feel like. That's when I started searching for more. And so, being in at a space where I am here to serve is what makes me feel whole. Because to your point, you don't have, you know, there's a lot of pressure, right? There's a lot of pressure, especially if you, as an entrepreneur, if you don't set up your income in a way that you're creating multiple streams of income, or you don't have, if you don't have steady income, if you don't have steady clients, like if every month you're trying to figure it out, your bills don't care, right? Your bills are they want their money. And so if you're at that space where you're still trying to figure it out, you're still trying to see like, you know, how can I make ends meet? Or all right, this is a new month. I got to hustle harder this month or whatever the case may be. There's that pressure there. But I will say as an entrepreneur, if that is your focus though, you will still be empty. Right. If your focus is only to make money, you will be empty. Your focus has to be on, you know, what problem do you solve? Honestly, what skills, what do you have in your arsenal that you can help someone solve a problem? And by helping that person solve that problem, the money's going to come. Right. And so you have to be in the service business. You have to serve people, serve their needs. And based on serving people, serving their needs, there's actually a fulfillment in doing that. You know, every single day I get, whether it's people writing reviews on my books, whether it's people, you know, sliding in the DMs telling me thank you for something that I helped them with, an email, whatever it is, I'm always getting affirmation from the people that I work with that, you know, you've helped me. And even sometimes it's even strangers that I've never even met before that are just like, yo, you don't know this, but you saved me so much. Or, you know, I'm in a, like literally, I think last night I got a DM from somebody who was like, yo, I'm, you know, I've been in a dark place lately. But every morning I wake up and I read your post, you know, you give me life. And I'm like, man, wow. like that means a lot to me. And so I think that is what is fulfilling. And I think that when you think about life, and I can tell you from experience that life is not a destination. Like there isn't, like stop trying to get to a place. Because when you get there, it's just human nature. It's just human nature. When you get there, next place. You're going to think about the next place. And when you get there, you're going to think about the next place. And so that's why it's important that you are loving what you do. If you're a financial, if you're a financial advisor, you're a financial coach, you're in a financial services business, if you do not like what you do, then you need to get out because you will not be successful. Does that mean you won't make a lot of money? No, absolutely not. I know people who hate what they do and they make a lot of money, but are they happy, right? Are they fulfilled? Are they able to enjoy that money? And the answer is no, because they're not doing what they love to do. And so always, no matter what, think about whatever you do as the journey. And if you're not loving that journey, if it doesn't feel good while you're in that journey, then you need to pack up, move on, and do something else. Even if what you want to do may not necessarily seem like it, there's money attached to it. Like if you love to play basketball, then you need to be playing basketball. Or maybe you need to be coaching basketball. Or maybe you need to be around basketball. Or, you know, or something around basketball. But it's the love for what you do that's going to make the journey fun. And while you're having fun in that journey, that's when the money's going to start coming in.
I think that's so true for entrepreneurs. I'm glad you said that. You said something on another podcast that I was listening to that you talked about how your wife helped you, you know, kind of stay in the moment. And I think that's so key for entrepreneurs, because it is a journey, and this is not going to happen overnight. But if you're in it for the long haul, like you said, if you're doing good work with good people, those things generally come. And you also said something about, and I want to talk about what you're doing right now. You said something about if you love basketball, you need to be around basketball. Maybe you're not going to be LeBron, like, because it takes a, you know, we don't get the best of the gene pool when it comes to that kind of stuff.
God had some play in that. Like,
But maybe you can be around it coaching. And see, so how I think that works for financial professionals, that I'll call it, like, maybe you're not going to be a CFP. Maybe you're not going to run a bank, but maybe you can help people with their budget, and maybe you can do financial coaching. You know, there's so many financial counseling. There's so many different things you can do. So talk about that, because there's a lot of inroads into this industry, and you don't have to be that big corporate Wall Street banker. So maybe talk about that a little bit, because like you've seen both sides. You've gone the kind of professional corporate route.
Yeah.
And then you said, I can get a little bit more flexibility, less regulation.
Right, exactly.
On this side, absolutely. Too. So kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, yeah, like for me, I love to talk, right? I love being on stage. I love radio. That's why, you know, radio, podcasting, talking, interviewing, like that's my gift, right? And so, because I have this background in finance and background in business, that's what I do. I talk, you know, I talk and I teach on business. When, you know, I played around with it, right? Being on both sides. I was licensed before, you know, I had my 63 life and health insurance, and I'm selling mutual funds and things of that nature. And there's regulations that come with that. And so I had to ask permission to talk. I had to ask permission to say certain things. And so for me, it wasn't aligned. And that's why I say, right, you start with just like, you know, what does success look like for you? What is your definite chief aim? When I look at what that means, you know, having a license and being restricted on what I could say was not aligned with what made me feel good. And so I looked at other avenues. And so to your point, there are enough people struggling for everybody, right? I never look at a financial advisor, as a financial coach, anybody as competition, because especially in the Black and Brown community, who we never for a long time had professionals who were talking to us about money and wealth creation. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, currently, if you look at financial advisors, Black and Brown financial advisors, what is it, 2%, 3%?
It's like less than 3%.
Less than 3%. Like, so think about that for a second. There's less than 3% of financial professionals teaching people how to build wealth and manage money, yeah. Right? And so there's never that competition. And so not everybody is going to be a financial advisor. Not everybody's going to be, you know, a CFP. But we need financial coaches, and that's why for me, that's what I do, right? So I'm a wealth coach.
Yeah, talk about that. Let's talk about MindRight and how people can connect with you in order to, because you said something beautiful the other day. You was like what you do is kind of like, you know, the step to help a person be able to work with a financial advisor or somebody like that. So how do you, what are you doing at MindRight, and what are some of the things that you're coming across and how you're helping people?
For sure. You know, so for me, when I looked at, you know, my business model, you know, I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to reach the masses, right? I wanted to build a national brand that could reach a lot of people. Hence why I started writing books, why I do a lot of national television and radio. But then I said, you know, it's one thing to give them, you know, give people the knowledge, but when people are ready to implement these things, like what tools am I giving people? What resources am I giving people? And so I started the company MindRight Money Management, which is a financial education company, but we also have programs. I have a program called the MindRight Legacy Builders Program, and it's a wealth building tool, right? So I give you a tool where you can actually log in and aggregate all your bank accounts. You can see what debt you have, to see where are you as it relates to your net worth. Are you moving in the right direction, you know, as it relates to your net worth? But my goal is to prepare people for financial advisors, because poor people people with low means, wealthy people, everyone needs a financial advisor. It does not matter. There's no, there isn't this thing like, oh, I'll get a financial advisor when. No, if you earn money, then you need someone advising you on your money. Especially if, think about somebody who is wealthy, somebody who has a lot of wealth already. They have a team of people. They have a CFP.
Let me interject. Yes. And this is a lot of I've been married for 22 years, and so some of this was my wife. But yes. I, as a professional, having done this for 20 years, have a professional. So right. It's like there's too much bias with me managing my own money for me to make the right decisions once the stakes get higher. So, no, you make an excellent point. So
right. You know, and so you think about, you know, having a CFP, having an accountant, you know, like having a mortgage broker, having a business manager if you're at that level, if investment, like wealthy people have a slew of people that they go to help maintain and build their wealth. And so for me, understanding where we are as a people, you know, my goal is to prepare people to be ready for a financial advisor. What does that mean? If someone, I guess when you think about, what is it, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Yeah. When you think about that, and I've been there, right? I've been to a point where, you know, let's say I don't have any money, right? I'm struggling. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I'm not thinking about retirement. I'm not thinking about the future. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to eat today. Right. So how can I possibly think about the future if I'm paying, you know, if I'm worried about student loan debt and I'm worried about all these things, then how can I possibly think about tomorrow? And so for me, it starts with addressing people where they are right now. Right. And so if you have a majority of people living paycheck to paycheck, if you have people who are knee deep in student loan debt, credit card debt, people who are only living on one source of income. What I do with my program is get you to that space where, you know, number one, you're defining what financial freedom means to you. What are your financial goals? Where do you want to see yourself? Number two, we're focusing on debt, right? Like, how do we manage your debt currently? How do we create a budget? How do we get the spending diary to figure out where's your money going currently? But then also, we talk about multiple streams of income. So I help people create multiple streams of income, whether it's, you know, intellectual property, you know, starting a side hustle, starting a business, investing in real estate, whatever it is, whatever that thing is that you can do that's going to give you that additional source of income, then we focus on that so that that way you get to a point where you have the basic, the foundations intact. So when you're ready, right, now that you have those foundations and, you know, I say, hey, Dominique, I got this client for you. Now it's packaged where, all right, now you took them here. All right, now, you know, let's talk about retirement. Let's talk about estate planning. Let's talk about all these things that we need to put into place. Let's talk about insurance. All these things that we need to put into place to make sure that we're helping you maintain your finances today, but we're also helping you protect your assets. We're creating, you know, an estate plan that you could pass down your wealth to the next generation. So all of these things that's necessary to break the cycle of poverty, right? So we're only 50 years in. When you think of, you know, I could tell you all the history as to why this is the first time Black and brown people are truly free here to build wealth and pass down generational wealth. And so we have to take full advantage of it. And so my goal with the My Right Legacy program is to really help people get to that space so now they could start creating generational wealth.
I love that. You know, me and my wife have conversations about, you know, you see the Jay-Z who's, you know, made the Forbes list and everything. But, you know, the deal is, you know, we have other cultures in this society that have had a 200-year head start. Like the behaviors that you're teaching in Mind Right, I love it because that is what that's the problem is the mindset. I think everything starts with mindset, and obviously there's a layer beneath that your experiences, whatever your experience in life, shapes that mindset. But we can always change our mindset because all it is software.
Absolutely.
Right? It's the software our brain is running, and we can change that. Then we can change our behaviors and it'll change the actions that we do. And then it'll change the results that we get. So, No, I love the way that you kind of pose that. So that is so cool. What are some of the, like, what is one of the common themes that you're seeing when people coming into that program? Like I call them money messages that we're telling ourselves. What are some of the money messages that you're coming across that like are probably the most common that you're finding solutions to?
For sure. So I think number one is people's relationship with money. I think that we've been taught, but we've been taught that we have to work hard for money. And the wealthy know that money needs to work hard for us. And so that's the number one thing that needs to happen to change. You know, when I notice that people are struggling with money is because they're too focused on their physical labor. They're focused on, you know, how hard can I work?
Trading time for money.
Exactly. They're at that space where they're still exchanging time for money instead of saying, okay, how can I get to a space where the money that I'm earning right now is going to help become the launch pad so that I can exchange, you know, I could work or have my money work for me, right? So that's number one. Number two is that people are not acting their wage. They're acting their want size. And so they say that they want financial freedom and they don't want to exchange time for money, but then
they do something different.
Right. They do something different, right? They have a $700, you know, car note, or they're, you know, they live in a neighborhood that they really can't afford. They're, you know, there's so many things that they're doing with their money that are all liabilities. And so they don't have the capacity to save money. And so now they're working for debt. They're working to maintain their lifestyle. They're not working to build wealth. And so those are the two main things.
Let me interject something. Like, what is your take on student loan education? I just got to get your take on this because I talked to a potential client the other day, and they were talking about how they were going back to school to get their doctorate. And I was looking at their balance sheet, and I was just like, for what? What are you doing?
I'm a man of the streets, right? So you can't, you know, like I'm not going to be for education before using your skills and talent to make money, right? So I'll give you an example. So I didn't get my bachelor's degree till 2015. That's 4 years ago, right? I got my bachelor's degree 4 years ago. And the only reason I got my bachelor's degree was because I wanted to be a CFP. And in order to be a CFP, you have to have a bachelor's degree. Yep. That was the only reason. I graduated high school. I already had my job. I went to a community college. I spent 4 years in a 2-year school. I got an associate's degree in finance and investments. And off and on was going back and forth to school. I don't believe that you need, unless your degree, like in my case where I wanted to get a CFP. And so I got my bachelor's degree. If your degree is not going to help you make any more money, you know, or like if it's not going to help you in your career trajectory, then I think you're wasting money
and time.
And you're wasting time. Exactly. And those are the two things that you know that make the world go round: time and money.
Can't replace your time. I mean,
exactly.
That's the deal on that. So yeah, I have very strong. You know, I got two in school right now. Yep. And they're going into professions that require the degree. But like I told them, I was like, hey, me and your mom, we've gone to school, we've gotten graduate degrees. However, you do not have to follow our path.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is a different society we live in. So
the one caveat to that, you know, because I don't want to, I'm not anti-school.
No, I hear you. Me neither.
Because I actually appreciate, that's the one thing I would have done differently, actually, is when I was in community college, and even, you know, I went to Baruch College, which the Zicklin School of Business is one of the top business schools, you know, in New York. And so I wish that I would have connected with more people, right? And so if you come from a space where you don't have a strong network, then, you know, going to school may be the right thing to do to help you build your network, right? Make sure that your focus is not just on a piece of paper, but you're actually using, you know, the time that you're in college to build a network, to connect with the alumni, to do your internships, like the things that will, you know, move you towards, you know, creating that career and life path that you want, but make sure you're using, you know, school the right way.
No, I totally agree with you. I think the more my concern is people encumbering themselves with this lifestyle that they think they're going to make the six figures as soon as they, you know, walk across the stage.
Right.
But then you've got six figures of debt and you've got a job that doesn't, you know, allow for you to maintain that lifestyle.
Exactly. And when you think about debt, majority of your payments is going to interest, not your principal. And so, you know, like literally I was teaching this class, this high school class, and we were going through a real life example of somebody who was paying $500 a month for like 9 years. I think like they pay over $50,000, you know, towards their student loan, and only $20,000, it only reduced their student loan by $20,000, right? So that other $40,000 went to interest. Like that is, like it hurts my heart even saying it just now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of money being thrown away, but I think the education, excuse me, the education component that you're doing it with MindRight is so key, because I think it all starts with financial literacy, financial education. That's what leads to economic empowerment. So, for like kind of just a parting thoughts, man. What would you say with the person that's out there listening to this that wants to serve? They got the mindset to serve, and they say, like, I want to do this. Maybe I'll go down the road of CFP. Maybe I'll go down the road of entrepreneur, you know, financial coach, you know, whatever. What would you give them as some parting wisdom, knowing all that you know?
Yeah, for sure. I would say do it first, right? Don't just jump into the water, like, dip your toe into it first, you know? I knew what I wanted to do because I had experience doing it. I knew what I didn't want to do because I had experience doing it. And so I would tell anybody who's getting into it, it isn't all glamorous, even as an entrepreneur, even, you know, 9 to 5, right? Both have their ups and their downs. And so you have to choose, you have to choose what fits for you. And so I would just say, just dip your toe, figure it out, right? So if you want to, you know, be in the financial services space, you don't necessarily have to quit your job. You don't have to start your full business. You do not have to quit your job. You do not have to, you know, go create the LLC first. The first thing you could do, volunteer, right? Like I got my start with Operation Hope. So Operation Hope is a national financial literacy program in 2004, right? I was still a banker. I would go to inner city schools and I would teach them about financial literacy, right? And so do that, right? You know, you got United Way, you got Jumpstart, Operation Hope, you got Jumpstart.
Yeah.
There's so many programs out there that focus on financial education. Start there, right? You know, volunteer and see if that's what you want to do. You know, if you have children, you know, contact your children's school and ask to speak to the PTA and work with some parents, right? Like do that, you know, first to see, all right, do I like this? Does this feel good? And if it does, now try to figure out the path, but don't. I implore you, do not just jump all in. Don't go head first, because once you're in it and you're immersed in it, you'll get to a space where you feel like you have to continue because you put so much on the line. Just try it out, you know, and I think the good thing about the world that we live in right now is that you have access to everything. You have access to information. You have access to everything you need in order to see if this is something that you want to do. I would just start there. I would start with just testing it out, seeing if you like it, and then want, you know, just like a relationship, right? You don't meet somebody the first day and say, oh, we're getting married, right?
You gotta date them.
Right. So date financial services. Right. Go on a date. Not just one date. Go on a few dates.
Courtship.
Right. Go on a few dates. You know, see how it feels. Right. See if this is something that you could get into long term. And if it is, you know, then pop the question.
That's I love it. I always kid with prospective clients. I'm like, hey, I'm not gonna rush you. I'm like, I've been married for my wife for 22 years, but even we dated first, so it's
absolutely exactly.
It's all good. Well, say, man, this has been so cool. Tell the people how they can connect with you if they want to follow you on social. Like, where can they find you?
Yeah, for sure. So if you go to my website, iamashcash.com, you'll see everything, personal, business, everything is there. You can also follow me on all social media platforms. I am Ash Cash. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, everything. And Dominique, thank you so much, man. I appreciate yeah, man. You, man.
This
thank you
fun,
for having
this
me on, fun. Man, for sure.
This is fun. Yeah.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it. And it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.